After a two-year lull in the U.S. frac sand industry, it came roaring back in 2017, and the same goes for sand mines right here in western Wisconsin. After a series of layoff announcements and mines being idled in 2015 and 2016, workers have been called back. Prices have been recovering, and drilling has picked up. Frac sand mines in western Wisconsin are busy, but there's still speculation that a massive sand mining boom in Texas will change the market and could displace some Wisconsin sand. We'll talk about all things industrial sand today, this hour, with three experts in the field right here on the west side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We have some power players from the sand mining world on the program today. First, I'd like to introduce Rich Buttinger. He is the operations manager for Fairmont Santrol, and he's also a spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Rich Buttinger, welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Rich.
Good morning. Joining us by phone from Texas is Jim Wicklin, I believe Texas, Managing Director of Equity Research for Credit Suisse. I guess I didn't confirm where exactly you are today, Jim.
Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Welcome. And Rick Shear joins us as well from Texas, CEO of Superior Silica Sands. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Rich. Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm speaking to you from Fort Worth, Texas.
Fort Worth. Very good. And, of course, we're going to talk a lot about Texas in a little bit here, about just the surge of activity that's happening down there. But first, I want to let our listeners know that they can join in the conversation as well. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Today we have limited phone lines available, but keep trying and we can get you on the air. We're talking about the recovery of the sand mining industry and just kind of taking the temp of it today, this hour on the west side. So first, I want to go to Jim Wicklund, if I could. Last July, I saw an article or kind of a press release from Credit Suisse that reported that the U.S. frac sand sector had reentered bullish territory and was expected to break a record that year for the amount of sand used. So did that happen?
We did. The end of 17 saw sand use in the U.S., proppant use in oil and gas wells, exceed the levels that we saw in 2014, which was the previous peak. And we did it with less than half of the rigs, drilling rigs, working that we did then. So it's not just a matter of that drilling activity came back. Wells are using significantly more sand. Sand intensity is moving up. Logistics around the sand is becoming more critical. So it's a stage to come back in many different ways and areas.
And Rick Shear, we've been hearing, or I've been hearing from different analysts for a while now, that sand use is going up per well, that more sand equals more output. And, I mean, what kind of volumes are we talking about? Because I heard some numbers that were really surprising, like something like 20 million pounds of sand, or that could be an exaggeration. But how much has it changed at the oil well?
There's no question, Rich, that proppant intensity has gone up year after year as this technology, the drilling technology, has evolved. Every step of the evolution of the technology has shown that more sand downhole per stage has given better yields for the wells. And right now, the numbers that we have at Superior Silica show that we're at about, on average, about 6,500 tons per well. But to your point, many of these wells are in excess of 10 or 12,000 tons per well, which is remarkable. It's probably three times at least what we were back in 2013 or so on the average frac sand usage per well.
And is there any sign that we hit a level where more sand doesn't do any good?
We will probably get to that at some point, but that stage is not in sight as yet, as far as people telling us in any way that proppant intensity has topped out. As far as 2017 versus 2018, on average, our customers are using 10 to 15% more sand per well than they did last year, and they're telling us they don't expect to see that top out at least this year or even next. So we'll get to that point at some stage, but it certainly isn't in the near term.
And Rich Budinger, you know, we've seen Wisconsin saw a big surge in sand mining production. You know, the number of facilities really exploded between 2011 and 2015. It looks like the industry seems to be built out in the state. There's a few more sand mines that are getting a lot of attention right now that are hoping to come online. But with this increased demand for sand, could we see more mines go up in Wisconsin, or will we just see more, efficiency measures happening?
Well, yeah, I think Rich is going to be a combination of both. To what extent, you know, time will tell. We know that permits have been active for many years on a lot of mines that are either beginning to be developed now with the business coming back and the capital becoming available. But there's also some new mining opportunities that are always out there as well as the industry has returned, as you stated last year, and will continue. We're projecting a very good year this year, which is going to bring growth to the state of Wisconsin as well as other areas, like you had mentioned, Texas and many other areas where industrial sand mining has been going on for many, many decades and will continue for many more decades.
And when you say a very good year, I mean, do we have a number to kind of peg that to, or is it just busy so times are good? I mean, in terms of total amount of sand, because I've heard some pretty big numbers.
Yeah, I don't track that, Rich. All I know is that demand is coming back. I don't necessarily know where it is relative to the previous years, but yeah, my focus is primarily in Wisconsin, and what we've experienced over the last year, maybe even a year and a half, you could probably go back into late 2016, is a lot of the mines that had been slowed down or idled. Not all the mines in Wisconsin were idle. A lot of mines were producing at very high levels, continue to produce. Mm-hmm. But we've seen, 2017, late 2016, a lot of the plants that had decreased their production levels returning to their capacity, their maximum capacity. So, what that means for Wisconsin is that there's additional opportunities to either expand existing facilities or search for new opportunities, new mines.
And as for uses, I mean, when things are going good in the energy sector, obviously a lot of sand from Wisconsin goes there. But are we seeing any increases in demand for sand for, say, foundry work or glass making or anything like that, Rich?
Yes, we are. The oil and gas industry, the oil and gas sector, our customers and that industry as well is more cyclical. It's more volatile with the price per barrel, price of oil. But, one thing that we depend on, diversifying our business and looking for other sources such as glass foundry, what we refer to as the industrial side or the industrial and recreational side of our industry. And that, as the economy is continuing to strengthen, as we've seen the last 12 months, and especially since our Great Recession, several years ago, businesses continue to recover. Commercial and residential building is up, which promotes industrial mineral use and industrial sand use for a number of products. So that sector within Wisconsin and other places in the United States continues to be very strong and continues to grow as well.
We're talking with Jim Wickland. He's Managing Director of Equity Research for Credit Suisse. Rich Budinger, Operations Manager for Fairmont Santrol, and Rick Shearer, CEO of Superior Silica Sands, three men that know what they're talking about when it comes to industrial sand mining and the proppant market. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. We do have limited phone lines today, so keep trying if you can't get in, and we will work through the calls as they arrive. Jim Wickland, I wanted to go back to you and... I heard, so in 2014, according to some numbers that I found from, I think it was from Credit Suisse, 56 million tons was kind of the previous record for sand that was, you know, being in.
Correct, and we easily eclipsed that last year, touching almost 70.
70.
This year we're expecting the number to be closer to 100 million in our forecast, and it's early, but our forecast for 2019 is looking for at least 125 million tons.
Good Lord, that's amazing.
Exactly, and so 2019 could very easily be basically double what it was in 14, and we still don't see the rig count getting even 60% of the way back to where it was in 14, which again demonstrates Rich's point on intensity of use. And so it's been an interesting dynamic overall. Wisconsin had the first mines that were the easiest to reopen, as opposed to in Texas, where we're having to develop a number of them, at least from scratch. But now the question is, of that 100 million tons used this year as proppant in the oil and gas industry, you mentioned earlier, where is it going to all come from?
And I've seen some articles hinting at a possible shortage of industrial sand or frac sand. Is that something on your radar?
We don't think it's going to be anything but a short-term issue. There's probably the Texas sand mines will probably not come on as quickly as the announcements have made it seem, and so that's one consideration. And so, might we still be short? I think both Ricks would agree we're fairly short now. Pricing is still going up on frac sand. But as we get into later 18 and into 19, that's where the real question is as to whether pricing holds up, because we'll have a much more capacity on by the end of the year than we do now.
And when we talk about these, of course, not all the mines that are being planned in Texas will even happen, but I've heard as much as another 50 million or more tons coming from the Permian Basin in the next couple of years. So, do you have any ballpark for how much sand could be coming from Texas?
Well, could be coming from Texas is almost an infinite number. We've been looking for sand for about 2.5 years, and we have found more than we ever dreamed. If we could find water at this rate, would be okay as a state. But it turns out we've got a great deal of sand, and so right now the real issue is much more in logistics. The sand that's being developed so far in Texas is going to require three trucks every 1 minute for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so traffic, we're going to be trucking Texas sand rather than railing Texas sand. The logistics may end up proving to be the bottleneck as opposed to availability of sand ultimately. But we think it's a fairly rational industry. The other two gentlemen on the phone work for very rational companies, and so the likelihood that they're going to cut off their nose to spite their face is probably not likely.
Rick Shearer, I'd like that's a perfect segue. I was going to ask you this about that, if you wanted to respond to what Jim just mentioned as far as the slow and steady wins the race kind of approach here versus, you know, a mad dash. But also I wanted to ask, as far as prices, you know, if we're seeing supplies that are tight and demand is high, I would imagine that prices for your sand has gone up quite a bit. Can you share with us a little bit of what it costs maybe per ton?
Sure, Rich. Well, I will say that pricing certainly since last year in 2017, when we started to come out of the downturn, prices have moved up steadily every quarter. They're continuing to move up steadily. There's a forecast out there by many, quote, experts that would say as the additional West Texas sand capacity comes on, we will start to see prices flatten out, maybe even erode. We don't see that, certainly not yet. Our prices are continuing to go up, and I think we represent most everybody in the market, and I can tell you we're still successfully moving prices up even as we project Q2 of this year. So the prices have moved up steadily as a result of the strong demand that you're hearing about. And the question right now is, will we start to see the additional capacity have an impact to pricing overall in the market? And I guess time will tell. I think the consensus, though, is of the 50 million tons or so of new capacity coming on in West Texas, not all of that will really materialize. So we'll keep a close eye on that to see how much real capacity does evolve here over the next year or so. And then also, it should be mentioned that the coarseness or the size of the proppant, the sand that's used, is also a factor. Right now, fine sand's in heavy demand, and there's a lot of fine sand in the ground in West Texas, which certainly is where the market is at the moment. But we are starting to see some interest in coarser sand, even in West Texas, people using more 30-50 now. Some of that because they can't get the finer sand, but some of it because there's some sense that a little coarser sand could improve the yield on that well. If that happens, there's very little coarse sand in the ground in West Texas, which actually plays into the hands of a lot of the Wisconsin mines, the northern white sand not only being the better quality, but the coarser run-of-mine sand would say, to me anyway, that northern white sand is not dead, and that's an important message for our listeners, even though there is added capacity coming on in Texas.
I want to get more into the whole Texas scenario and how it could impact Wisconsin's role in the market in just a bit. We're talking about the frac sand, the increased demand for frac sand in the U.S. Wisconsin mines are busy, and this comes just after a two-year lull from 2015 to 2016 that saw some pain in the local industry, where people were let go temporarily and where some mines were actually idled, but others kept operating. So it's a complicated story, but we've got the men on board to discuss it today. Joining me this hour, Rich Buttinger is the operations manager for Fairmont Santral. He's also a spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Jim Wicklund joins us by phone as well, managing director of equity research for Credit Suisse. And Rick Shearer is CEO of Superior Silica Sands. We'll be right back. We've got a first call of the morning that we'll get to right after this break. This is The West Side.
Support for WPR comes from The Clearing Folk School in Ellison Bay, offering classes for adults in the arts, humanities, and natural sciences in a wooded setting in northern Door County. Information is at theclearing.org. Support also comes from Literacy Chippewa Valley. Registration is open for businesses and organizations to put together teams for the 2018 Scrabble Bee on April 19th. Registration by March 21st. LiteracyCV.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about frac sand and industrial sand mines in Wisconsin. And what we're seeing right now is a boom in demand for sand, and at the same time, there's some activity happening in Texas that will change the game. To what extent, people are not sure yet. It's a wait-and-see kind of time for that. Let's go to the phones right now. We've got Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I'm concerned about the nature of this industry, the boom and bust nature. I know when the last bust came, a lot of people who had invested in trucks and trucking companies got burned pretty bad, and people got laid off. And the industry's own literature, I've seen some industry magazines, they're moving toward automation. So the number of jobs that this industry creates are questionable. And I think the negative economic impact that this industry has on a region is quite clear. There's a drop in property values surrounding this mine. Any mines.
Sure.
It sort of kills the housing industry, which employs electricians, carpenters, roofers, and people who buy houses, buy furniture. So that sort of economic the effect is injured. And then the water use, I'm concerned with that, the number of high-capacity wells and how these mines affect water in the area, the filling in of wetlands, the drying up of creeks. And so I think we should think hard and long about investing in this industry in a state like Wisconsin, or maybe in Texas where there aren't very many people, might be a better place to locate this type of industry. But
all right, Willem, we got a lot to unpack there.
In the areas.
All right, thanks so much for the call, Willem. I'm going to go to Rich Buttinger first on this, and when the sand mines were coming into Wisconsin and were opening up shop, there was a lot of town hearings, county, you know, there had to be a lot of local approval for different permits. And we heard jobs, and economic activity, economic development. But, you know, as Willem said, the boom in the bus industry after 2015, 2016, some people might have a little bit of fear that this industry could just kind of pack up and ship out if things get bad again. So what do you say, first of all, just looking at the economic ups and downs side of things, Rich Bunniger?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily describe it as a boom bust, right? So there's increases and decreases that we've seen, you know, cyclical changes within the business model. So, you know, we could go back and look at, you know, the last several decades of industrial sand mining in Wisconsin, which has had a very rich history in Wisconsin and also a very positive economic impact in Wisconsin. So great growth is what we've experienced back in, I want to say, probably 2007 to 2010. And then I think, you know, it wasn't necessarily oil and gas that caused the cycle. It was, you know, the general economy and the recession that we were in that caused that decrease. Just recently, back in 2015-16, it was directly oil related, but I would not call it a bust. Several mines in Wisconsin continued to run at their capacity, and several mines, you know, decreased their capacity to slow down to meet the demand. Or the decrease in demand, but there's been thousands of jobs in Wisconsin. It'll continue to be thousands of jobs. It's not just the jobs at the sites. It's the equipment suppliers out in Milwaukee and Eau Claire and Madison. There's many equipment manufacturers that are feeding equipment and have jobs at their factories that support our industry as well. So that will continue. I believe that we'll have a very positive trend, you know, over the next several decades. Oil and gas is just one of the industries that we supply. Glass is very strong in Wisconsin. There's several glass plants and there's several foundries that will continue to operate. And we look at positive economic impact as those jobs as well, adding to the overall economy. So I think, you know, industrial sand is a very positive thing for Wisconsin. And will continue to be a positive thing for Wisconsin. We could go back into the early 1900s and locate sites that have been supplying industrial sands within Wisconsin to factories and manufacturing processes in Wisconsin as well. So it's a very rich history that's been very positive in the past and will be very positive for many, many decades to come.
As I look at the clock, I realize we've only got 10 minutes with you, Rich Bunniger. So I wanted to ask you about another thing that Willem brought up, and this has to do with you know, environmental quality and wetlands specifically. There's a company out of Atlanta, Meteor Timber, that has been making a lot of news. They want to build a $70 million sand mine in the Monroe and Jackson County area. The plan includes having to fill around 16 acres of what has been described as really high-value hardwood swamp, which is kind of hard to find in the state at this point. So the company is planning to do a huge remediation. They're planning on preserving wetlands that on property that they already own. But the whole thing kind of came to a head recently. Two environmental groups are trying to overturn a permit that the DNR gave the company. And then we heard that there was a bill that had to do with a lot of rules related to wetlands. The Republicans in the Assembly tacked on an amendment that would exempt this operation from certain regulations in order to try to get past the roadblock that they say was set up by these environmental groups. First of all, what's your take on this company basically asking the legislature to help them out so they can get operating because these groups are kind of blocking them?
Well, you know, it's an interesting topic. You know, it goes on, you know, often with many manufacturing, many industrial sectors that are trying to, you know, identify opportunities for business. But it's also important, Rich, to understand that, you know, the Wisconsin DNR, you know, they do their jobs very well. They protect the environment. Many industries, you know, are directly engaged with the DNR and having dialogues on, you know, science and fact-based regulations. There's a number of regulations out there right now, you know, for industrial sand mining, which is, you know, non-metallic mining, that protects water use. I Willem had mentioned, you know, groundwater use, permits that need to be acquired for high-capacity wells, permits that need to be required not only at the DNR level, but also at the local level through zoning and conditional use permitting. Many counties and townships have certain zoning requirements and comprehensive plans that are tied not only to the growth of certain industries within their communities, but also having positive environmental impacts or mitigating potentially negative environmental impacts. So, you know, zoning requirements are there. Land use requirements are present. Counties have adopted, you know, certain zoning measures that, you know, have planning tie back to their comprehensive plan. And, you know, the DNR is there to, you know, the state level, and they also support the local level when it comes to potential environmental impacts, and permitting is required, you know, for all those uses, whether it's, you know, operating within a wetland or adjacent to a wetland, or, you know, use of groundwater, surface water permits, stormwater permits, you know, all kinds of environmental permits for dust and particulate matter are required by these sites to obtain before they begin operation.
Definitely lots of regulations. Some people obviously feel that there should be more, or they should be more strictly enforced. Everyone's got their opinion on that. I wanted to ask you again about another amendment that had to do with the bill. This was the state budget, the transportation budget. There was an amendment added to that would have prohibited local governments from being able to regulate things like blasting, hours of operation, noise, and air and water quality, and this related to sand and gravel operations that supply road projects. But up until a couple days before that amendment was included, it was written more broadly to include the industrial sand industry. So did WESA members or members from some of the companies ask for the exemption from those local regulations? And I guess following up on that, do you think some local governments take it too far with regards to how they try to regulate the industry?
Well, I mean, as far as local governments, I mean, there are zoning requirements at the local level, as well as state regulation requirements. So, you know, when it comes to blasting, I mean, everything that was listed within that bill or within that proposal, you know, there are regulations that manage that activity within the state. And so it's not like it's an exemption from regulation. That those uses of property, whether it's blasting, you know, or just general land use, it's covered under zoning or by certain regulations within the state. So, you know, it's not an exemption by any means. It's just regulatory certainty is what the industry or industries are interested in, you know, in order to operate your business in within any state, you know, Wisconsin or otherwise. You know, industries require a certain level of regulatory certainty and regulatory authority to be able to grow their businesses. So I think, you know, the backdrop of that proposal was just that. You know, we were looking, you know, as an industry as a whole, non-metallic mining, it wasn't just in, you know, sand and gravel or industrial sand. It could be crushed limestone that's used for road building or concrete or, you know, cement manufacturing. You know, regulatory certainty is very important to our industry, as it is every other industry as well.
Was it unfair that industrial sand was left out of this amendment then?
No, I don't believe so, and I don't believe we were left out of it. You know, non-metallic mining, you know, it's part of the mining, you know, non-metallic minerals. I mean, you know, metallic minerals such as sulfides and copper is different than non-metallic mining. So, mm-hmm. So I don't believe we were excluded I think, you know, overall, you know, the land use, the mining use is non-metallic mining.
All right. Let's go back to the phones here, and we've got Linda in Birchwood. Linda, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I wanted to ask a question tied into kind of the history of the sand mining development and the ups and the downs of the cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, many of these mines and operations were permitted under the DNR as no-discharge mines. And I guess my question is specific to Superior Silica, because last fall I attended a non-metallic mining plan amendment public hearing.
Okay.
And during the last down cycle, and an operation was idled, water accumulated at the site, and the site needed to be dewatered. The county allowed pumping of that water to apply to cropland, but then also Superior applied to change their permit to allow discharge to groundwater and surface water. And when I talk discharge, it's not just stormwater, but also contaminated stormwater and processed wastewater.
All right.
So just as industry likes to have certain regulatory certainty, the people that live around these operations are also seeking some kind of certainty.
Sure.
When permitted, they were no discharge, but now there's a trend to discharge. So in these up and down cycles, where is the comfort for people knowing that these operations are being monitored and
sure.
now we're dealing with discharge?
Linda, thank you so much for the question. I'm going to ask you to take the answer off air. Rick Shear, I don't know how much you know about the ins and outs of permits at all of the different mines, because you're at the top of the heap there. But what's your thoughts to what Linda said?
Yeah, sure. Linda, let me say, first of all, the DNR does continually monitor what we do and what every mining operation does in Wisconsin, and we have a close relationship with them, and we welcome that monitoring and to make sure that everything's being done as required. And we're very proud that we've had a good track record on that note. As far as the water discharge, we have really not put any discharge out there other than one time that I can recall where we did have a break. Again, we're not using any contaminated water as far as anything that's harmful or whatever. But all of our mines are actually closed circuit. The one thing that we have done out there, Linda, that you may be aware of, is we are looking to mine under the water table. And we'd like to do that, again, only through the permission of the county and of the DNR, so that we can actually get to some finer sand and get some additional sand that is on that property. But it has nothing to do with any allowance to discharge any water on that mine site. They're all closed-circuit units, and we've continued to be very diligent on that.
Thank you for that. Let's take our final break here, and also it's time to say goodbye to Rich Bunninger. He's operations manager for Fairmont Santrol and spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Rich, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rich.
Take care. We'll be right back with more West Side. We've still got Jim Wicklund, managing director of equity research for Credit Suisse, and Rick Shear, CEO of Superior Silica Sands. We're talking about the frac sand market in 2018, record year in 2017, and it seems to be increasing in terms of demand for sand from Wisconsin and across the nation.
This is Stephanie Elkins. This fall, I'll be aboard as WPR Travel visits France and embarks on a cruise along the Seine River, taking in the sights, sounds, and flavors between Paris and Normandy. On day 3, we start our journey in the heart of Paris. We'll enjoy a private tour of the beautiful Paris Opéra Garnier. And while in Paris, we'll meet up with NPR's Eleanor Beardsley. Details of Paris and Normandy by small ship with earthbound expeditions are available at wpr.org/travel.
Support for WPR comes from Port Washington Tourism Council, presenting the Port Explorium exhibit, To the Waters, Escaping the Fire on the SS Atlanta. More information on tourism and events is at visitportwashington.com. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Museum, presenting a 60s dance revival with music by the Thundermen, plus a supper club meal, April 7th at the Florian Gardens in Eau Claire. Details are at cvmuseum.com.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, stations 88.3 WHWC, Menominee Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW. We're talking about frac sand today with, we've got two men on the program who are on the front lines of the industry. Rick Shearer is Superior Silica Sands CEO and president, and Jim Wickland is the managing director of equity research for Credit Suisse. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. And we just said goodbye to Rich Buttinger. I hope I dropped the right line. Rick Shearer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. I pushed the right button. Okay. If anyone has a question or comment, 1-800-228-5615. Say, Rick, I wanted to touch back on the mining below the water table. Is that happening up in, or are you hoping to do that in the Barron County area, or which operations?
Yes, we are. We've been working closely with the county and the local communities as well as the DNR to mine a little deeper, which would mean mining below the water table. I want to emphasize this won't impact the water availability at all for any of the local farms or any of the communities. Mm-hmm. It won't impact the aquifer. To Willem's point, I did want to interject that early on we did work with Chippewa County, Dan Masterpole and his team in mm-hmm. particular, and we offered up the funding to do a study on the water usage at our sand mines, and I think this is representative of others in the industry, to determine did it have an impact on the water availability for the surrounding farms and so forth. And the record will show, and anybody's welcome to look at this, it's a public record with Chippewa County, that there was no impact because, again, the water that's used by these mines is closed circuit, it's recycled, and it's minimal compared to what a lot of people might have expected. And the study's very helpful to just prove that there's no risk of seriously impacting the water availability in the community or the surrounding farms.
And I believe there were monitoring wells established at the Superior Silica Mines, the processing facilities, too, to see if any kind of flocculants or any kind of material from the wash ponds had migrated in the groundwater. And as far as I know, I don't think there have been any positives.
That's right, and we're still monitoring those, and we'll continue to. But, you know, what little flocculant is used is all food grade. Mm-hmm. We would never, and we're very careful not to use anything that could be harmful, even in a worst-case event where any water might leave the property.
So, gentlemen, Rick, I'll stay with you, and then I'll go to Jim. But you mentioned the finer-grade sand being below the water table, a little deeper down. We touched on this a little bit already, but Wisconsin's kind of known for the more coarse sand, and you throw the numbers out there, which mean almost nothing to us. But, Rick, can you explain what's the difference between, you know, mining at above the water table to below, and why are you trying to get at the fine stuff? Is it because we're seeing more of that being used?
Well, the geology in Wisconsin in many areas does show a coarse run-of-mine sand, and that's a very positive thing for Wisconsin and for the industry because even though the finer-grade sand is in high demand right now, these trends do vacillate, and many of our customers are saying that certainly coarse sand will come back in and more coarse sand will be used over time. We'll wait and see if that actually happens. But in the geology in Wisconsin, if you go deeper, typically, you will get into some finer sand. Hmm. And by mining under the water table, we are able to get to 10 to 15% at least finer grade sand. So We want to do that, again, you know, with all the right approvals and following all the regulations and making sure that we don't put anybody at risk here. And we've gotten approval to do that at two of our mines right now, and hopefully we can do it at a couple others to make this happen.
And Jim Wicklund, you mentioned a little bit that earlier that the fine sand is what is kind of in high demand down in the Permian. Can you explain to us a little bit about what the pros and cons are for finer sand and coarser sand? Because what I've learned is that these are like the secret recipes that people don't quite like to share, but just kind of give us a primer on it, if you would.
Sure. There's different grades of sand. There's very fine grain sand when you go to the beach and it gets into just about everything, you know, it's fine grain sand. And because it's fine grain, since we're pumping this into basically very hard rock, we are putting the sand, proppant is what it's called, because mm-hmm. it props open the microfissures in the rock that allows oil and gas to produce.
Right.
The smaller the sand grains, the stronger they are. They don't crush as easily, and they go farther into the reservoir. And so in places like the Permian, which is an unconventional reservoir, 100 mesh sand has been, you know, very popular. 4070, which is the grade below that, is a coarser grade. And then you get into the differences. While we've got 4070 in Texas, the crush strength of that 4070 is not as great as the crush strength of 4070, the equivalent size sand grain in Wisconsin. And so the expectation is that places like the Permian, and we only mention the Permian because it's basically using about 40 to 45% of all the rigs and all mm-hmm. the services and sand and everything else in the oil business today.
Right.
It's the biggest and growing the fastest. It'll end up using 100 mesh from Texas because it'll work. And it'll probably end up using more 4070 from Wisconsin because it works better than the 4070 in Texas because of the crush strength.
Hmm.
And so you're setting up a dichotomy in the market. One thing, Rich, though, I would like to say, previous two calls, this is a cyclical business. But then every business is a cyclical business.
Sure.
Typically, up cycles in the oil and gas business last 7 years. And so 7 years of an upcycle of positive economic growth is rarely a bad thing. And relative to the last woman's call, I know this is a little bit counterintuitive, but the large public companies are the ones who do the best job of looking after the environment and behaving themselves, if you would, from a risk perspective, because they have the most to lose. And so Rick went to great lengths to explain how they toe the line on every single thing and take no risk whatsoever. And he's right, and his company does do that, and the biggest companies do. And I know that seems counterintuitive sometimes, but as an industry, we behave ourselves exceptionally well, even though we do get criticized on occasion. It's usually the smaller fly-by-night companies, though, that cause the problems, not the big public companies.
And also, it seemed like in Wisconsin, there was a bit of a growing pain period because there were a lot of companies coming online, and that's when we saw most of the reported ruptures in processed water ponds or leaks or whatever. So it's since then, at least, and some have argued that that's because the enforcement has gone away, but we haven't seen a lot of the big stories related to spills or whatever at sand mines. So that's an interesting point. And I wanted to talk about, so just in a nutshell, we already touched on this, but Texas, I mean, Rick mentioned that Texas isn't going to kill Wisconsin sand. Jim Wicklund, do you believe the same? I mean, because there's some people up here are concerned about that. They already are fretful about what they think is a boom and bust industry. And they saw what happened in 2015, 2016, and there's some people worried about
no,
that happening.
No. It, 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 it definitely won't kill the Wisconsin sand business. Now, there's a difference. I'm not saying that it will flourish like crazy, because the growth in the sand development in the U.S. has been focused on Texas, but that's the growth. The baseline, you still got a significant advantage providing sand from Wisconsin to the Marcellus, the Utica, the Haynesville, the Bakken, and a number of very active oil and gas areas. The quality of the sand is better. 4070 sells for a premium price over 100 mesh today, which puts Wisconsin at an advantage. So the growth may be a little challenged, but does it kill the Wisconsin sand business? Absolutely not.
We were talking about the upside.
Let me just add to that, Jim, by saying certainly that right now we believe about 40% of the total frac sand used in the industry is in-basin sand. The local sand, if you will, or regional sand. So 60% roughly is northern white sand out of Illinois and Wisconsin. And as we see people continue to look at this equation, customers saying, many of them, I'm committed to the higher quality northern white sand. We believe the performance of the wells are better with the better quality sand. Some people will make a choice to move over, sure, to in-basin sand, but it's 40% right now. We can debate what that ultimately will get to. What is it, 55% ultimately? We'll see. But it isn't 95%. And to Jim's point, we are confident and our customer base is confident that there certainly is a need in the market for northern white. We've invested $200 million in Wisconsin, in the mining operations there, and we're going to do everything to protect that and to make sure that those operations continue for decades.
But, Rick, aren't you also, I would imagine, Superior Silica has invested or is investing in the Permian, correct?
Yeah, we have invested as far as transload sites, and we've invested in regional mines. We consciously made a decision when so many people rushed into West Texas not to go there, but we're investing heavily right now in the Eagle Ford, which is South Texas, and we've opened up a mine there. So we want to be in a position to meet the demand of our customers in whichever direction they want to go, and we are, as a result, opening up regional mines, and we're looking to continue. But we have 7.2 million tons of capacity in Wisconsin. We have 428 employees in Wisconsin with an annual operating budget of $150 million a year. And we have every reason to continue to work with our customers to keep our position strong, if not even building our position with Northern White out of Wisconsin.
We have got one more caller on the line. We'll get to them actually, let's take the call right now. All right, caller, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling because I do appreciate the conversation about the technical aspects of the mining as it stands right now. But one of the things that hasn't been discussed, you know, they talk about wanting to have regulatory certainty in Wisconsin, and these gentlemen don't live in the area that we do. We're around the sand mines, and one of the things that's not being addressed is our certainty that when we moved out here or lived here for our life, all of our lives, that we have some certainty that we're not going to live in an industrial zone. They've picked several areas where there is not zoning, so it's easier to get in. We understand that. But it really has, it's made a difference for our sense of security and certainty that we're going to be living in an area that we thought was going to be wooded and hilled, and what the reason that we came out here. The second thing is they talk about all the regulation. This seems a little disingenuous given what we've heard about happening to Wisconsin DNR and the lack of violations, the things that we have seen violations here locally. And they have, you know, it's been very difficult to get detention. But we did them in terms of the boreholes, but outside of that, it's been very difficult to get.
Thank you for the call. We're getting close to the top of the hour, so I want to get a quick response. I'm going to go to Rick Shearer for this, since you've got some footprint in Wisconsin. What about the... you know, the whole certainty for people that, you know, might have bought some land in an agricultural area or a rural area, and then all of a sudden in industrial use pops up.
Yeah, I think the issue here, Rich, is trying to find a happy balance, I'll call it. First of all, we are going to be very protective of the properties that we do mine. We're going to reclaim that mine. The good news is with the geology there in Wisconsin, we can reclaim that mine to site to plantable, rolling farmland. So long term, certainly we'll go back to this pristine, beautiful landscape that is there in Wisconsin, and that's certainly our commitment and our intent. In the interim, what we want to do is operate in a way that we can coexist with the residents around us. We work very hard to try to do that with berming and with trees and with grass planting and keeping dust suppressed and lighting suppressed and even noise. So given the economic advantages and given still the need environmentally to create an aesthetically pleasing area, that's what we're trying to find, is that common balance to create a win-win for everybody, and we're committed to that.
And, Jim, you'll have the last word. I wanted to ask, you know, when 2015, 2016, we saw OPEC countries increase production, which kind of drove down the price of oil and definitely contributed to the downturn in the market for oil and for industrial sand. When will, I mean, get out your crystal ball, when's the next downturn going to come? And, I mean, could it be at the hands of OPEC? I mean, what would it take for the market to kind of crash again, or at least slow down?
Right now, it would take the U.S. exploding in terms of activity to flood the market with oil again. And so it would kind of be a catch-22. Business would be fabulous for about 2 years, and we will have generated enough oil production that we'll have a surplus again, and oil prices will come back down. It usually, like I said earlier, these cycles usually last 7 years. Could it last three? It could, but that would be doubtful. So the outlook is that it's very difficult for anyone right now, OPEC, Russia, Saudi Arabia, or the U.S., to bump up production enough to cause this cycle to roll over, and at least without some big lift in activity that would last a couple of years.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for that. Jim Wicklund is Managing Director of Equity Research for Credit Suisse. Thank you so much for joining us, Jim. And Rick Shear is CEO of Superior Silica Sands. Thank you as well. And a big thanks to Rich Buttinger for joining us for the first three quarters of the program. Also, thanks for those who called in with your questions or comments. We appreciate that. Also, big thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Bonnie Clark, Henry Lippold, Hannah Pitzel, Kate Springer, and Dean Kallenbeck. Next week, we'll talk with business leaders from our region about how President Donald Trump's tariffs on aluminum and steel could impact our local economies. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again.